Tarek, one of, I hope, three podcast episodes that we'll record this week. I'd like to do it every day. It'd be kind of neat to have five shows a week, especially if they're like upwards of an hour long. It's Eric Chase, a little bit after 4 o'clock here in Toledo, as I get ready for the show tonight on Q105 from 7 to midnight every single weeknight. 7 to midnight here on Q105, weekends, 3 to 7, all that stuff. We're playing songs, like 10, 12 songs an hour. Every now and then we'll stop down and we'll talk for a minute or so, but all the long stuff and no commercials here, and some curse words, here on the podcast, which you've obviously found one of two ways, Q1055.com, or you've searched my name, Eric Chase, E-R-I-C-C-H-A-S-E, and found them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or if you're an Android user, the Podbean app. Or you've subscribed, and I hope you get your notifications, which I think can be screwy from time to time. At times, I'll get them almost as soon as the podcast posts. Other times, I'll get an avalanche of notifications of podcasts that I need to catch up on. And we're going to talk about what I listen to, because I get asked. It's like the new, so what kind of music do you like? Or do you like the music that you play? I can try to answer that. But the podcast one, I can try to answer that as well. But the big question on today's podcast is, which is worse, or which would you rather have? A no-win situation or a win-win situation? For me, not as easy as you would think, but I'd like to think that I'm a fairly complicated person. Too complicated for my own good many times. Before we get into those two big things, some little things here to dive into quickly, there's an event happening on Saturday. I haven't talked much about it because I didn't know much about it, but back in summertime, July or so, Neil, who is a frequent attendee of the Lucas County Suicide Prevention Coalition meetings that I go to every third Thursday around 3 o'clock or so at the Kent branch of the Lucas County Public Library, run by the program's coordinator, my friend Jen Wakefield, where we talk about suicide awareness, suicide prevention awareness, and a lot of mental health things. So obviously, I'm deeply involved. I've been welcomed onto the board of that committee of that program, and I'm happy to do so. So Neil, who comes to the meetings, messaged me one day and said, "Hey, can you help co-host this event? It's called Recovery is Beautiful." I don't even know if he gave me the name, but Neil asked, and it was mental health. I'm in. It's this Saturday from 10 to 2. I get an email from work about 2 weeks or so ago, and they say, "Hey, can you bring the Q105 vehicle and do some remote breaks, as we call them, live from this event?" I'm like, "Yeah, I have something that morning. Let me check my calendar." I said, "Neil, is your event called Recovery is Beautiful?" He said, "Yep." So work asked me as well. You might have seen my Facebook post where I said, one of the most rewarding things in my life is when I go meet with friends, people, whatever, and I can weave my friends together to collaborate on community projects, promotional projects, business projects. I love when I leave a meeting and I make notes for myself saying, "Hey, let me send an email and I'm going to connect you to or exchange numbers." I love doing that. And it's kind of neat in this case for me to be the nexus of something where Neil asked me and work also had something involved with an advertising campaign and they needed somebody and here I am. So Recovery is Beautiful. It's a mental health event. It is, and Neil works at the Thomas Wernert Center, a mental health place that we have here, I guess a lot like Zeph and Unison and all the familiar names, my friends at Harbor, all the familiar names that we know. Let me pull open this flyer. It is in a spot that I didn't know how to name, the Uptown Green Park. What? It's in the green area, which is kind of like a little park next to Pro Medica on the green. This Saturday, it goes from 10 till 2, 1810, or right on Madison Avenue, again, right next to Pro Medica's Market on the Green. It is Recovery Month. I didn't know that. Every month for me is Recovery Month. Hear from those in recovery while also helping us increase awareness and understanding of mental health and substance use issues. If you're tired of saying on the internet, "It's a choice. Addiction and alcohol abuse is a choice." If you're tired of saying that, please come out and we can get you in front of the right people, the experts, the people who are deeply trained, who have a vast educational background to just explain to you why that's incorrect. And you'll be better at internet fights, right? And we could all be a little bit better there. Free food, theatrical performances, certified peer supporters, resource fair, photo booth, games and fun. And I think in something that I read here for work, there will be some Cleveland Browns type giveaways as well. Recovery is beautiful. You could also mark another couple of things on your calendar. October 6th is the OOTD, which should be outfit of the day on Instagram. In this case, it's Out of the Darkness Walk, which is my, let's see, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, my fifth year getting to host, MC this event. When I say host, it in me evokes excitement, enjoyment, entertainment. And this, the Out of the Darkness Walk with the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, it's a more somber, monotone type thing. Like, we want to bring some joy to some people, and we want to connect people who have been, whose lives have been touched by suicide, whether they have lost a friend, relative, family member, or maybe they themselves have been down the road of a suicide attempt. And we try to bring all these people together. So maybe just illustrating that, and by me saying that, you can see why it's not the happiest of places. But I do my best, and I think I get a little bit better each year in walking the line of showing reverence to the names that we read of those who have lost loved ones to suicide, and trying to brighten the mood in ways that I can. It is a good thing for you to come out to if suicide has been a part of your life in any way, shape, or form. And I say this, I've said this from the first year I started helping out my friend Rachel Vallis at this walk. And again, it's an international park, October 6th. So not that far off, about 2 months away now. When I open the festivities or when we get into the ceremony, I say, I'm a part of this so that my dad and loved ones and friends don't have to be. Because I have had suicidal thoughts and ideations, as if you've followed me before. I have thought about what the world would be like, how it would function if I weren't around. Who would let my dogs out if I killed myself? Would they be, you know, pooping on themselves until somebody found me dead in my apartment? So I've had ideations and thoughts. So again, I say, at that walk, I'm here so that my friends and loved ones, my dad specifically, so they don't have to be. Out of the Darkness Walk. The following week, I believe on Sunday, October 14th, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. I'll get you more on this one, but it's a different kind of walk. How's it different? Well, it's a walk, but it's at night, and there are lots of cool lights. I was a part of this for another radio station that I worked at back in Allentown long ago, maybe 2008, 2009. And now I am going to be a part of it because my friend Mary Beth Zolick, who is a used to be on the radio here, and we were co-workers for a very long time. She has now beaten cancer's butt twice, and I believe she is going to be one of the hosts for that walk. Maybe you saw a story that WTOL did on her a little over a week or so ago. And an interesting story. My mom was diagnosed with lung cancer, stage 4, in January of 2015. And I had been in the area at that time for, let's see, 13, 14... about 2 years. Well, fast forward ahead. I guess most lung cancers are sadly diagnosed when they are already stage 4. And I asked prognosis from medical professionals, what I've looked up on the internet without being overridden with panic and anxiety. And then talking to a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, who I think his mom had the same thing. It's a 6 to 8 month window. Then in July, I think July 21st or 22nd of 2015, my mom passed away. So like 6 months of the diagnosis. And somewhere around that time, I don't know why or how, but Mary Beth and I ran into one another where we both used to work. And I'm going to have her on a podcast soon. And she knows this. I've told her this before. Somewhere right after my mom passed away, and Mary Beth was mostly out of the woods with her first cancer challenge. She had it again in, 2016 or so? Yeah, I think so. She had it's called a relapse, or came out of remission. I don't know the medical terms. And quite frankly, I'm fortunate not to know them. So that means that cancer has not been an evil insidious part of my life, like many people's lives it has been. So sometime that summer, Mary Beth and I started talking about sports. And I don't know if it was about the Tigers or she just mentioned something like, or whatever I said while we met in the kitchen one day. And like, did I have the Tiger score? Did I watch the game? Verlander, this, something, that. I don't know, but it came up. And I knew that, I all of a sudden knew that she was a big sports fan, a big baseball fan. Tigers, she likes the Cubs. And from that moment moving forward, that was our bond. And, you know, while I had lost my mom and I didn't talk about sports, but I had lost a pillar in my life, a female figure that I would always talk to, mom to son stuff, son to mom stuff, and all those things. She'd ask about my dogs and how are things going in Toledo and blah, blah, blah. And I lost that woman to go to. I didn't have any more grandmothers left. But I had gained it in eerie symmetry. As my mom passed, I picked up Mary Beth as my new person to go to, because she's about my mom's age, maybe a little bit younger. And while she wouldn't say, "Hey, son, how are you?" We could talk about sports, and I didn't have that with my mom. So every morning thereafter, we would talk about sports, and then I learned that she's a diehard Piston fan, and it's hard to find Piston fans here where we live, but sports was a great connection for us, and since we've both not worked where we did, we've met up frequently to have coffee with one another. I know that I've often mentioned to people that I had coffee with Mary Beth, and I wind up being a conduit for people who have deeply cared about her as a former coworker or former friend or whatever it may be. They're like, "Hey, how's she doing?" I'm like, she's doing great. Passed her treatment. She's off and running, a new house, everything. And that's been important to me to have that friendship with her. But it was just serendipitous, symmetry, irony, whatever you want to call it, for, again, my mom to have passed away. And then shortly thereafter, I get this great new female figure in my life in the form of Mary Beth, and I'm glad to still have her. That was hers. So we got all that. So what's, if you've seen my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, over the last week or so, I have posted a lot of Jean-Luc Picardisms from Star Trek The Next Generation, which is my favorite Star Trek series, even though I was very impressed by Star Trek Discovery, which has kind of been, you know, we're having a rebirth here in Toledo. Star Trek has long been dead on TV. And Star Trek, the movies from J.J. Abrams and Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto, they've all been okay. They're good popcorn movies, but they haven't carried on the canon and lore and continuity, which I've always been enamored with. Star Trek, for me, I got into it when I was a young teenager. There are many emotional points in my life where I go back to it and vice versa. And by the way, Star Trek has always done better on TV for the storytelling aspects and the way it mirrors and reflects society. Any of the shows really has done that quite well. And it's harder to do that in a movie, because you got to wrap things up in 2 hours. But over the course of, you know, 20-some episodes, you can do detailed reflections of what's happening in the real world. So even if you're not a big, you know, Star Trek nerd like me, I don't like the word Trekkie, but whatever. If you're like that, and if you're not like that, but you want to see something that reflects what's going on in society quite well, all of the series have always done that. And even more so, it has been one of the most progressive television shows in TV history. It is usually almost always ahead of society when it comes to race and ethnicity and gender relations. It's not perfect, but it showed things that were appalling to a lot of people as far back into the 60s. Now, things that you would never see on any other network or television show Star Trek was the birth of. So I take a lot of pride in that. But I've had like several figures in my life who I'd aim to be like. And I would, in recent years, suggest that people not look at athletes or celebrities as idols, because we forget that they're human beings and they're extremely fallible. Doesn't mean we shouldn't look up to them, but your hopes could let, your expectations could be deeply let down. Look at Bill Cosby as a great example. He was America's dad, and now he's a scoundrel and a despicable human being who mistreated women is an understatement. Assault and violence, and it's just disgusting and disgraceful. So, like fictional characters. I mean, you can like Cliff Huxtable, but not Bill Cosby. So, like fictional characters. This is going to sound really nerdy, but you know, some of the people that I truly revere, Abraham Lincoln, I know there are warts there, and I know he's a real person, unless you're talking Vampire Hunter, right? But Optimus Prime. Who else did I like? I liked Ragnar from the Viking series as he was a single-minded family man and put so much into family and community. There's another one that I'm missing. Sherlock or Bruce Wayne Batman for their attention to investigation and detail and seeing beyond what's right in front of your face. And I need to brush up on those skills. And Jean-Luc Picard for his diplomatic leadership, his ability to emotionally disconnect from things and be objective in his decision-making, and the amalgamation of all those fictional characters, I think paints me pretty well. And I strive to be a little bit better and take some of those traits on that they exemplified more and more each day. I need to get a pen. I have to hold on to something sometimes when I'm doing this. So I've posted those Jean-Luc Picard-isms. And people seem to like them. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep doing that because, quite frankly, I've had to go back and watch episodes. And I've enjoyed them, but I've been actually taking notes on the notes feature on my iPhone to post them. So there's some work involved, which is fine because I enjoy going back, rewatching things that I've seen half a dozen times is more. But those are words of wisdom from Jean-Luc Picard. And hopefully that show has its own kind of rebirth or renaissance with how popular Patrick Stewart has become over the years for his immense talent in you know, theater and in the very few movies that he's been in. He's been Professor X, and he's a good follow on social media, on Twitter and Instagram. I believe he is an avid dog lover and has recently adopted a dog or two, and he posts those pictures, and my heart just melts. I'm like, this is like a real human being who I can truly look up to. But to go to another thing in Star Trek, and I will try not to get eyeball deep into Klingons, phasers, and warp drive here. There's something called the Kobayashi Maru. What? Is that like something I'd get at a sushi place? I believe it happened, and my Star Trek TOS, the original series and movies, is not as exemplary as my Star Trek knowledge for all the other series and the Next Generation movies. Sorry, I'm just not a huge the original series Kirk and Spock fan. But I believe it was in Star Trek 2. We got to find out what the Kobayashi Maru was, and it was a test at Starfleet Academy. And again, I'm not going to beat you over the head with Klingon shit here. Test at Starfleet Academy, which is what it is, and it was a no-win situation. There were Klingon ships, and and the Starfleet cadets lost every single time. It was a test of character and how you handled stress and how you went through adversity. Another maxim or tenet that I like to live by or think about is adversity doesn't build character, it reveals it. Once more, adversity doesn't build character, it reveals it. So, Cadet James T. Kirk here in Starfleet was tired of being in the no-win situation where his ship got blown to smithereens every time. So he rigged the test. He rigged the computer so that he could win. And he was given some type of commendation for outside-of-the-box thinking, even though he cheated. But we've all been in a no-win situation before a time or two. I've been in what I've recently decided to call a win-win situation. For over the past 3 weeks, or at least up until, I guess today when I signed the documents, I have been home hunting, and I've been taking a crash course on buying a home and home buying and everything I need to know. I put one offer on a house, accepted the counter offer, knowing that the roof was really questionable, and I was gonna counter back with that, but I bailed on that because it was just a really shady situation going on. It was higher priced than most homes in the neighborhood that were similar to it. There's just a lot that smelled bad about it. And I trusted my Sherlock Holmes Batman instinct and said, we're going to get out of this. And last Monday, I found a house in the same neighborhood that was nearly identical on the inside as far as how it was set up. And I didn't fall in love with it. I fell in like, and I put an offer in on that. And by the way, I've learned a lot. I've said this crash course has been an intense 3 weeks, and I have learned a lot from so many friends who I've solicited their help with this whole process. Because remember me all along, when I would tell you how much my rent is, you'd be like, you're paying what? You know you can get a mortgage for like $300 less than that? Yes, I know, but as you may now see, you know, doing radio for as long as I've been in radio, I have moved a lot. I've been fired now 3 times, and that's forced to move, though not here. But something where I was living, am living now, caused me to get in the habit, or at least get in the mood of, I need to do some diligence on buying a house, and I need to see the numbers and do all this math for myself. And it led me to not one, but 2 offers. I went so far as, I think a week ago on Wednesday, went through an inspection on this one house, where yet again I found out that the roof was in question. And then some other circumstances changed. Oh, to go backwards 1 second, I'll come back to the circumstances changing again on Friday. Part of the reason I've had frequent second, third, fourth, fifth thoughts about this was I'm an advocate of doing lists. Thanks to my friend and former boss, Nathan, to telling me to write lists down. Don't do them in your head. Don't do them on your hand. Write them down. Make to-do lists for yourself. Pros and cons, don't do them in your head. Write them down. You know how in the past before, I've told you, don't think you're going to have a good day. Say, as weird as it may sound to whoever is around you, or even if you're like me and you do it in the shower, today I'm going to have a good day. And here's why I'm going to have a good day. You're going to say these things out loud. It does something with the neurons in your head where you do a little microsurgery on your own neurons, and it helps you just a little bit. Like I've said, no matter how quirky it is that gets you in the right mental place, in the right psychological and emotional place, no matter how weird it may sound, if it works, keep doing it. So make the pros and cons list. And I've done this with the house buying. And even when I've spoken to people, and I've spoken to many, many people, upwards of a dozen or more, to get their take on what should I do? What did you do? Why did you do it? And I guess I'm not your typical single family home buyer, because I'm not looking to have a place for any family. It's just still me and the dogs. I don't really need to grow where what I have right now, I fit into quite snugly. The houses that I looked at, I'm like, wow, I'm going to have more empty rooms than furnished rooms. The finished basement is like, I can have an office. I can have a guest bedroom. I can make something. I can have a Transformer shrine room in the basement. But I don't need all this room. And I'll have to get used to mowing the lawn frequently and doing my own other landscaping. Do these plants grow by themselves, or do I have to tend to them? Got to get a snowblower and shovel. Things I don't have to do right now when I live in an apartment. And these are all part of the pros and cons. And I am not embellishing or exaggerating. I'm not speaking in any kind of hyperbole. Most of the things that people told me as far as the pros to owning a house were you get equity. You're paying yourself as opposed to paying someone else. That, and you get to do what you want. And I get to do, I've never thought, man, I can't do that because I live here. Now, today I did go to Home Depot and get outside my comfort zone, and I'm going to paint a couple of accent walls and fix my thermostat, or get a new thermostat, hoping that it gives me a little bit more energy efficiency, because I keep my thermostat at 75. It's never cool, but it's comfortable enough, and I still have a $100 electricity bill in June, July, August, and maybe September. But I've never once thought, no matter where I've lived in an apartment, man, I can't do that because I don't own the place. So there have been like one or two pros for owning: equity, and you get to do what you want. But the cons just seems so long. You got to do your own landscaping or pay someone to do it. You got to do your own shoveling and snow blowing. And seemingly something is always going wrong. And maybe that's just how we're wired as humans. We're fast to complain, but never showcase that we have a lot of contentment in life. It's always my basement flooded. This broke. The roof needs to be replaced. It seems with a house, there's never a time where you're not doing upkeep. And again, I know you're investing back into your home, but isn't it only worth something if you're going to sell it? And that's one way to look at it. Although I can look at it this way. I think if you let me do some quick math, I've lived where I lived for, it'll be 6 years. We'll say 13 through all of 18. So six times. So I might have paid somewhere in $60,000 in rent, and I don't have any equity to show for it. But I also didn't have to replace a roof, change any of the HVAC stuff, which, you know, depending on if you're getting the furnace and or the air conditioning replaced, there's another $5,000, and who knows what else. So it probably would have been better to have been owning all along. But that's why I decided to explore this now and see if my money that I'm paying for rent wouldn't be better off. And when I looked at the house, maybe I would have saved $50 a month in total cost when it comes to mortgages and taxes and insurance and other little things. I'd have a water bill. So maybe I would have saved like $50, and I would have put that aside for those rainy day projects that would have come up for the house. But I got to tell you, it seems like the cons list for owning a home, especially by myself, is a lot longer than the pro list. Because again, something is only worth something if you're willing to sell it. So on Saturday, after having a long conversation with my friend Sarah Hegarty and with my dad, who I have spent hours on the phone agonizing through this decision, I came to the conclusion that this is not a no-win situation. It's a win-win situation. As several people have pointed out, and as I've come to, you know, figure out, there are people who are far less capable than me, both as far as doing the work and financially capable, and the resources that I'm fortunate enough to have been responsible enough to have at my disposal, there are people that are far less capable than me taking care of houses. So I could have done this, but if I didn't, where I am is okay, and I've decided to stay where I am because, what do they always say, location, location, location. That's one of the most important things. I stopped and forgot about my location and the opportunities that I might have in the near term or maybe the midterm, within a year or so. And if circumstances change again, there will always be other houses. And that leads me to why this was a win-win situation. And many people might kill to have this trait that I guess I'm fortunate enough to have. I have no human being likes change. And if they do tell you that they like change, they're lying. I don't like change. But I do know that while I complain about the change at the forefront of things and as it's happening, I think I adapt quicker than most. So I, like you, a human being, don't like change. I have an innate ability to adapt and adapt quickly. If you followed something in my life or followed something that hasn't been so public, I have moved on without regret. We always get asked, well, do you have any regrets in life? And God's honest opinion, or God's honest truth, I have one regret in life, one regret. And it took me until 3 years ago to regret this. When I was playing baseball in high school, I wasn't wearing my glasses. I needed glasses because I was always either the tallest or my real last name starts with W, so I was in the back of classrooms, and I couldn't see shit on the chalkboard. But I put my glasses on, and I could see. I never applied that to baseball, and there was a time in my senior year where I was like, hey, let me try outfield, and I'll never forget, a ball got hit, and I couldn't see it. And all these years later, and shortly after I graduated high school, I got contacts. Because my vision was so bad and I didn't want to wear glasses anymore. Only regret I have in my life is not having some kind of vision aid while I was playing baseball. Who knows? Maybe I'd still be playing. I couldn't, if I was decent enough to start in high school, not wearing glasses, not being able to see anything, I couldn't see the signs across, like when I was at first base, I couldn't see my coach at third base. I'd have to look over at the ump and call timeout and go, you know, wash fake dirt out of my eyes or wipe fake dirt out of my eyes to get the signs again. I couldn't see. I have one regret, not having had some kind of visual aid while I was playing sports in high school. Only regret in my life. So there's an example of this innate ability I have to adapt. So if I would have moved into the house, it would have been a pain in the ass. Maybe something very expensive would have broken right away. Now, the warranty would have covered that, but maybe something else. Maybe something else would have popped up the inspection didn't get. Or I stay where I am, and maybe after 4 months, circumstances once again do a U-turn, and I need to call up a couple of my friends who I need to thank before I get done with this and go, yeah, remember going into like 3 or 4 houses every day for a couple of weeks straight? We need to do that again. And I also need to realize that the house that I had the offer on that I pulled out on, the second one with the questionable roof, had a very high move-in ability rating. And if you look at Zillow or any other home buying sites, you see all the glowy praise for the house in the paragraphs that describe it that say, just move right in. I went to a bunch of those, and guess what? I could not move right in. There would be a lot that needed to be worked on. But this house truly had that. It would have needed little to no cosmetic work. There were some places that I went into thinking, yeah, you could move right in and then rip that wallpaper off, rip the wallpaper off the border of the top of the ceiling. So some people could move right in, but not everybody. And even in those situations, I would have adapted. But this house was truly perfect to move right into for me. It also was more optimal than the first one I put the offer in on because the lot, another home buying buzzword I learned, was half the size. The first one was daunting, 7,000 square feet. The next one, about 4,300, a very manageable front lawn, a back lawn that had some bald spots that I would have needed to work on, but totally manageable as far as, you know, landscaping, snow, and maintaining the lawn. A lot of people fall in love with things and get emotionally attached, and I think you know me well enough to know that I don't get emotionally attached. And in some ways, I wish that I did. It might make for longer lasting friendships and relationships. I talked about my mom passing away. I was as objective as one person could be when one of their beloved parents dies in that instance. She got lung cancer. I reasoned it as, I'm glad she didn't get it sooner because she smoked for a long, long time and didn't take care of herself. And in fact, I was so objective and robotic about my mom's passing. My brother had, there was some real strong discord between my brother and I that I had to work on. But my mom passed away as she did, and I was very objective and robotic about it. The day of my mom's funeral, or I think the day that she passed away, within hours later, I went to go see Ant-Man. With my dad, it might be a little bit different because I'm more deeply emotionally attached to him, but I move on pretty quickly. But I lose out on the intimacy of many things, relationships, even inanimate things. There are people who fall in love with cars and or houses, and if a better offer for someone else comes along and where you can't afford that car, you wind up not being able to afford that house, people are devastated. Not me, but had I moved in there to that home, I might not love it like the person who is going to buy it. So while I am thankful to have this skill to be very adaptable and move on very quickly, I do wish that I had an ability to be a bit more intimate with many things in my life. And I've never been bashful about this before. I think that lack of intimacy comes from the lack of intimacy that was on display, or in this case, not on display, between my mom and my dad as I was growing up. If I've never told this story, I'll tell it now. I think I was like 18 or 19. I'd begun to work at the radio station. I don't know. I was an adult at this point. My brother was 11 or something. We're 8.5 years apart. I remember it was one midweek night. I was at home in Philadelphia. I'd still live there. I'd not moved away yet. It was like 9:30, 10 o'clock. I go to make something in the microwave in the kitchen. My dad comes in and I see a look on his face. And I'm like, oh, whatever. Had a bit of an ambivalence, or it wasn't a smile. It wasn't a frown. It was right in between. The serious look. And he said he needed to talk to me. And usually when he would tell me he needed to talk to me, I was in some serious trouble. But he didn't have an angry look on his face. And he said to me that my mom, they said, your mom and I are going to, we're going to split up. We're going to get separated. I don't remember the exact words. But like in a matter of fractions of seconds, I processed it. And what was I processing? I didn't realize it until years later. I was processing, you know, their lack of affection and intimacy, and all the other behaviors, the unloving behaviors. They would never fight or disagree ardently in front of us. There was just a lack of intimacy, like hugging, kissing, touching, showing love for one another. And I hadn't recalled that in many, many years. I processed all of that and I realized, oh, okay, well, that makes total sense. And I didn't say that, but within a couple of seconds, I said to my dad, well, are you still going to love Paul and I, my brother? He said, absolutely, of course. I said, okay, well, I'm just going to eat my pretzel now. I again, no regret because I understood it. And again, just an innate, highly skilled ability to adapt. And I don't really know where that came from. But at times, I do wish I was able to be more intimate. And that's why I worked so hard at what I did since January, lasting longer than most things in my life. So there's that. I am staying where I'm staying. I'm going to do some speaking about getting. No one ever got better staying inside their comfort zone. No one ever learned anything inside their comfort zone. There's a little bit more wisdom. Got outside my comfort zone at a suggestion from my neighbors or taking something that they've done. We'll see if the thermostat helps. And I'm going to do some accent wall painting. Figured since I've been in my place now for almost 6 full years, I'm going to try to add, and I'm not tired of it, but just add a little bit of new life to it. And I hope the good things turn out for this. So thanks for listening to all this. And one last thing, the realtors that helped me through that process, Kim and Kylene Boos. Did I say that right? B-O-O-S. Kim and Kylene, her daughter, work for Howard Hanna. They have been immensely helpful, and maybe more than anything, patient with me. And I kept apologizing, saying, you know, I'm sorry for, you know, bouncing through all these houses and I feel like I'm wasting your time. And they said that I wasn't, but they were so amazingly helpful and taught me so much. It doesn't get more rookie or amateur than I was going into the home buying process. More people I have to thank. My friend Ashley, congratulations on your engagement. I told you it was going to happen. Thanks to the other Ashley, Bumble Ashley. Demetrius was able to help out quite a bit. I have a third friend, Ashley, who has always yelled at me for wasting money on rent and not being more of an adult by getting a place, learning how to become a homeowner, take care of the things that go wrong, and mow the damn lawn. And there are other names as well, people that might have helped out, who I might have surreptitiously asked on Facebook. I might have been asking you a question as a Facebook post or just asking you directly, but I might not have been saying, hey, I'm buying a house. What can you help me out with? So thank you as you helped me through that process. I've made a decision. And again, it was win-win. I either wind up with a great home, a great house in a great neighborhood for what would have been a very reasonable price, I think, or at least certainly very affordable, or I stay in a place that, you know, I have no issues with whatsoever. The win-win situation. In this case, it might have been better off being no win. I thought it was no win when I started. I have to leave my apartment. I have to go find a place to live. I don't want to own a house at this point in time. So win-win versus no-win. What's more difficult? I told you the struggle and the agony that I went through of win-win. Thanks again to Kim and Kylene from Howard Hanna. Thank you for listening to this. I think we have another episode tomorrow night, Wednesday night, with one of the legendary personalities in Toledo radio and then other personalities in at least Toledo podcasts and formerly radio, Bumble Ashley and Philip on Thursday night. I'm actually adding this on because I completely forgot. Maybe I'll have to do this in longer form at a later podcast. A friend, my neighbor last week asked me, so what podcast do you listen to? That when I mentioned, hey, have you checked out the podcast yet? Or here's the podcast. People now often ask me what other podcasts I listen to. It's the new version of, so what music do you like? Which I've never been able to answer in a succinct and comfortable way. Or people like to ask, do you like the music that you play on the radio station that you work at? I can never answer those in an easy way. I get very verbose and long-winded about it. Long-winded is sometimes good on a podcast, but the podcast that I listen to, it's funny. I've been long familiar with that word, and I'm glad now in 2018, people don't get freaked out when you say podcast, like it's some visionary form of technology that's, should I listen to it? Am I going to get hurt? Do I need it more bad? I'm glad that podcast has been adopted quickly, but 10 years or so ago, I would come in to work Monday morning and do some music log scheduling, and I would listen to something on a website, which was also available on a podcast, Judge Jules. My podcast listening began with DJ producer mix shows. That one was like 2 hours long. To this day, I still listen to it, and like you know the word EDM. You go to electronic music festivals all the time now. I've liked electronic dance music my whole life because it was essentially top 40 music when I was growing up listening to the radio in Philadelphia. And now that it's pop music, it's crazy to hear. So one of the podcasts I listen to is the Judge Jules one. There's four specifically that I listen to. Judge Jules, Ferry Corsten, who is another DJ producer, does an hour-long Corsten's Countdown. Above and Beyond, two trance producers have had many hit singles. Listen to theirs. And Marcus Schultz, the global DJ broadcast. Those are the four podcasts that I listen to regularly. There are some other ones as well. Each night when I go to sleep, I open up the ESPN app and I listen to a TV show, the audio version of it, that happened earlier in the night called Pardon the Interruption. Hidden Brain, which is produced by NPR, and it's mostly, as you can maybe guess by the word brain being in the title, it's 99% psychology. A lot of psychology, a lot of behavior. Why do we do what we do? The latest episode, which I've got to go back and listen to, is, and I would like to listen. I try to listen to a podcast when I lay down and take a nap, but then I'm like, no, I want to listen to this. So I often listen to most of my podcasts when I'm at the gym or if I'm ever taking long rides, which I never do. When I take rides, I make my phone calls. Or when I'm walking the dogs, I will finish up or start podcasts. But Hidden Brain, the latest one is about bullshit jobs where you literally do nothing. You spend more time on YouTube and social media sites than you do actually working, and your bosses don't care or don't have a problem with this, and it sucks your soul away. So that's an idea of Hidden Brain, or it talked about relationships and a rerun from a couple of weeks ago about, hey, it syncs up with my thinking. You know, for only like the last 100 years or so, 150 years at most, we have married for love. We've, in the past, married for dowries and land. And how many cows does that girl's dad have? So it was an interesting take on love, romance, and relationships. So that's an idea of Hidden Brain. And then there is a website that I go to, theringer.com. They crank out lots of podcasts for all the different major sports. They did a great one called The Rewatchables, which I listened to every day after Westworld was over from February to April. It took me down the Reddit rabbit holes I didn't want to go down myself on the internet. And the other places I get most podcasts, on Twitter, when I see suggestions on there that people really enjoy, or websites that I go to. There's one that I like, Vox.com. They have some good ones, or Marginal Revolution. So the other podcasts that I find or listen to not as regularly are ones that I come across on different websites that I visit on a daily basis. In fact, when I worked at iHeartMedia back in 2014, I think, I had a great idea as the iHeartRadio app was growing. I wanted to aggregate and collect a lot of the sports podcasts that I listened to and give them a better presentation quality or a better production quality. A lot of podcasts that you would think the content I would enjoy, for instance, one, Fangraphs. It's a baseball website that I go to that is very stat and analytically heavy. The presentation for a lot of them is not very entertaining. It's mundane, and it's just not enjoyable to listen to unless you can just take that blah delivery and take the numbers and enjoy it for that. I can't. I don't need bombastic, over-the-top hot takes for anything. I need to be educated, but I needed to have some entertainment value as well. I wanted to take podcasts like that, sports content, and add the entertainment value to maybe these very vanilla deliveries. A couple of people thought it was a really good idea, but there was a lot of turnover on the back end of people who would produce, of people who would help me get these things set up. And it was kind of freaky. I don't ever know what happened, but I know a lot of those people weren't with the company in a very short period of time, including some of the very high up people. But it was a good idea. And now look where we are in the app world, where there is a lot of that and all the different app sites like TuneIn, which I use, and iHeart, and even Spotify becoming a center place for podcasts now. So sometimes I have really, really good ideas. That was one of them that I couldn't connect with the right person to make that all happen, because I really did. So those are the podcasts that I listen to. You might have suggestions that you want to pass along to me. I don't listen to the Joe Rogan one. Dr. Andrea likes to suggest the Dan Savage one, but I'm always open for podcast suggestions.
This has been a Cumulus Media and Q105 collaboration. Three unicorns were harmed and lost their rainbows and horns in the production process. We use cookies for various purposes, like eating and flavor for protein shakes. And you have agreed to this and all other secret policies by enjoying the preceding audio content, which we highly encourage you to hashtag subscribe and share. You can click here for all other legal crap. And now hit skip intro to go to the next podcast. Just kidding. It's the See More Episodes option in your app. Q105.